I'm Hugh Acheson, and this is The Passenger from iHeartRadio. I travel a lot for work as a chef. I'm really interested in what makes these places tick. So I'll give you my take on where to go, what to do, what I find intriguing, and we'll also talk about immersing yourself in the culture and what it means to go to a place as a visitor, as a passenger. And so this show's about that, where we'll talk about that place. Later on, we'll talk to Afro-Cuban musician Sima Funk, and I'll get feedback on what I've done and where I should have gone. It's a travel show. My name's Hugh Acheson. Let's do this. I'm standing on a corner in central Havana with a friend. We're both tourists. We've arrived last night. I'm kind of a tourist. I have a connection to Cuba, which I'll get to later. And it's a beautiful day, and we're wandering over to Old Havana. We're in Centro. Centro's just to the west of Old Havana. We're waiting for the crosswalk, the light to turn. And a man comes up. He's young. He's probably in his mid-20s. He's very excited, and he's excited just to talk to us. He says, "Where are you from?" I say, "Canada." He says, "Where do you stay?" And I say, "Oh, we're staying at a beautiful little Airbnb mini hotel called Villa Juanita in Vedado, the neighborhood over to the west." He goes on to say, "Well, it's a really special day in Havana because years back, Fidel, that's the Castro, he made it possible for cigar workers, which comprise a lot of the population of Havana in a lot of ways. He made it possible for them to take home cigars from the factory at cost and sell them for a slight markup. And this would be a lot cheaper, but it's only done one day a year, maybe two." And I'm like, "Wow, this seems like a bit of a ruse." But I'm kind of buying into it. Because maybe I'm just nice. Maybe I'm gullible. And he goes on to say, and this is a brilliant little aside, he makes it a little more palpable and relatable. And he suddenly says, "Oh, it's also salsa festival tonight, and you should go down. They'll be dancing, and it's the music's amazing." And that's to take away from the possible ruse, but I like the ruse. So we bid him adieu. Remember, I've told him where I'm staying and where I'm from. We walked three blocks down in the general direction of where he was pointing towards, where the apartments would be, where people would sell cigars. Not really, in effect, I wasn't really thinking of buying cigars, but it kind of was in the back of my head. We're in Havana. I could smoke a cigar now and again. Suddenly a man comes up in the middle of the street. Another man. He's older than that. He's maybe around 40. And he says, "Hey, Canada, I'm your neighbor. I live next to you. Where you're staying in the hotel, Villa Juanita." And I say, "Wow, that's really strange that you're now in Centro." And I'm kind of a little suspicious, but I'm also excited to be there. And when you're excited about something and you're happy in a situation, I don't think you really see the ruse. And anyways, even if it was a ruse, it was innocuous. So the man shuffles us along to an apartment, and there's a number of people in the apartment. They're all selling boxes of cigars, and they all have the proper seals and stamps. Whether they're really proper, I don't know. I'm not a counterfeiter, or I don't work for the Department of the Treasury to spot these things. And I do buy some cigars. I cobble together the money in my pocket out of pesos, and make the transaction and walk out and realize that I probably overpaid for cigars and that this is probably a ruse. But a ruse only is a scam when it really gets to you, when it really affronts you. But it can be respected when it's part of a way of life that a culture has had to adopt just to get by. Havana, Cuba. What a place. Cuba's got a really interesting history, and it's a place that you should go if you can. It's not the easiest place to get to anymore because of sanctions and restrictions on U.S. travel there. I have two passports. It makes it a lot easier. Cuba was founded as a Spanish settlement in 1511 by Diego Velázquez, and Velázquez founded the settlements of Baracoa, Bayamo, Santiago de Cuba, and Havana. Havana was actually founded twice. It was literally in swampland and later had to be moved to its current location, which is this beautiful walled-in city that's dilapidated. And when you talk about dilapidated cities, the nice word for it is it's developed a patina. And it really has. But the patina is on all these amazing old Spanish architecture and falling down buildings interspersed with horribly, like, just brutalist Russian architecture because of the really Russian dominance since the revolution. It is a society that can get by with nothing. And that's why you should go there in a lot of ways, because it's despite hardship and despite every hurdle put in front of them every day, these are people who are innately happy. And it's a really beautiful place to go. When we talk about food, and obviously I'm a chef, so a lot of this will always focus on food. You talk about a cuisine of necessity again. When you go to Miami and eat Cuban food at Versailles, it is a cuisine of opulence and tons of food. And maybe that's an expat reaction to the limited access to food and product that they have now in Cuba. Post-revolution, much of the agrarian culture and the agriculture of Cuba was dug up to replace with sugarcane. For production of sugar that would be sold to Russia. They didn't really foresee the breaking down of the Soviet Union in 1991. I don't know. I guess a number of people did, but I don't think the Russians did, nor did the Cubans. And that really threw Cuba into a spell of trying to figure out what they were going to do with their economy. And the economy was really pivoted towards tourism. But at that point in time, you can't really subside on sugarcane unless you learn how to eke protein out of rum, which you can't. So within the confines of food, the old school of food is very Caribbean. It's not spicy food. It's very based on plantains and rice and beans and pork, simple breads, and yuca and things like this. And those products still exist, but because of the non-abundance of things in Cuba, you run into issues with eating on a fairly regular basis. And the food quality is up and down. You have to kind of lower it down from a Michelin star perspective to I need to eat something that's going to fill my belly. And you definitely can do that. There were many restaurants that we found that were really great. There was a place called Salci Pizza. Salci Pizza is a tiny little almost kiosk of a restaurant that is, by its name, is around bread and pizza. It's kind of a bakery that does good food. It's right near the University of Havana. The man is Alberto Gonzalez. And Alberto was a chef in Italy for a long time. He had a Michelin star in Italy. He's Cuban, and he moved back to Cuba. So he opens this little place. And like anything else, it is a cobbled together simple place. It's tiny. The food is great. But when I went in, he was talking to a woman who turned out to be a classical pianist and one of the most revered pianists in Cuba. She's an expat. She's a Brit. And she had lived there for years and years, and they were just conversing, having fun and laughing and big belly laughs. And there seemed to be not much activity in the way of food. And that's because I asked Alberto what was going on over whether we could eat. And he said, no flour today. Flour is kind of intrinsically important to making a pizza and baked goods. But he suddenly went behind and started gussing up food for us because, regardless of what they have, hospitality is really at the core of everything people like Alberto and every Cuban I have met is all about, is they are about providing something. So he provided the big spread of spelt breads and different types of things with no flour in them. And it was great. It was interesting. And again, it identified this idea that Working with nothing, they will still provide something because that is what they do. At the end of it, he wanted to refuse payment. I paid him anyways. But again, these are people with next to nothing who will give you the shirt off their back and feed you with nothing. And it is such a beautiful culture in that way. When we think about Cuba, we think about a number of things. We think about Ernest Hemingway. We think of Fidel. We think of Che Guevara. We think of rum. We think of daiquiris. We think of Cuban music because of the Buena Vista Social Club. But all those are tips of a very interesting iceberg. So you can learn a lot about a place, I think, by going and getting a drink. One of the most favorite bars, or the famous bars, is El Floridita, which is Hemingway's favorite bar in Havana. To me, it's good. It's become a bit of a tourist trap in some ways, and there's usually a small band as you walk in. It's very brightly lit. They make you a daiquiri or a Cuba Libre, and you kind of get in and get out. There are better places to go in Havana, and there was one called El Café, which was amazing. This one that we went to a lot, El Café, is just on the corner of a park, and the park is really interesting because the parks within Havana are kind of the centers for Wi-Fi, and you buy a little Wi-Fi card for like a couple of pesos. And they're usually sold by people in the park who bought them at the government office and then resell them for a slight profit within the park. You'll have no trouble getting one. You log on through the system and get onto pretty much the slowest snail Wi-Fi system on the planet. But all these people are on their phones kind of getting updated on their worlds from these parks, because otherwise Wi-Fi and internet connectivity within the island is really restricted and next to none. Your cell phone generally won't work unless you're on Wi-Fi there, so plan accordingly. But sometimes it's nice to travel to a place and unplug. And in Cuba, you're forced to unplug. I think that's a really important aspect of Havana. Now, it's few and far between that sometimes you find a place that you just feel so at home when you're traveling. I mean, I think it's key to good traveling that you always find a place where you feel at home. Maybe it's entirely different than what you're used to, but that you feel like you belong there. And whether it's a restaurant, a cafe, a coffee shop, a library, whatever it is, you need to open yourself up to finding that place. And I found one in Havana that is that to me, which is called El Dandy, E-L, and then next word, D-A-N-D-Y. It's right next to Cristo Square. It's this kind of two-room place with a door guy outside. It's not a fancy bar, but it's kind of this tons of ephemera everywhere. Just interesting kind of shabby chic type of bar place, but they have really good food as well. It's really active and youthful and interesting and just is a ton of fun. So El Dandy, which is right in Old Havana, and it is and right next to El Dandy, or just across the street, it's Villegas is the street, is a store that designs fashion and art and has amazing prints and things like that. And it's called Clandestina. Clandestina also has a map that they've produced, and it's just a curated map of what to do, where to eat, nightlife, parks, museums, what to do on the weekends, which beaches to go to. And it's in this amazing hand-drawn map that they sell. So that's called Clandestina. Clandestina also has just amazing art prints that you can buy. They're really inexpensive, and they're beautifully silkscreen prints. We went to another place that I'm blanking the name of, where it was just a printing house, and you wander in, and knock on the door, and the guy let you in, and it was a print silkscreen print shop that was huge and really old, and this man was showing us around, and he spoke no English, and I was telling him to watch out behind him, that it was hot and his quesadilla would be ready soon, because again, all I know is kitchen Spanish. But they just had beautiful, stunning prints, just stacks and stacks of different runs of different prints, and you can buy those. So you just have to go out and find things and realize that there are things there of interest. Staying there is very inexpensive. There are lots of Airbnbs. Now there's VRBO is active there with Airbnb as well. There's small hotels. They're the large government hotels that are beautiful and interesting. They tend to be more expensive, though, and a little more not maybe as fancy in the interior as the exteriors exhibit. I stayed at a place called Villa Juanita just recently, as I told the man on the street, and it was a beautiful, absolutely amazing place that supplied breakfast every morning. They would get you whatever they want. It was inexpensive. The sweetest people running it. It was totally secure. And let's talk about safety. When we travel, we always are interested about safety. I don't think anything would ever happen to you outside of getting sold cigars in Cuba. The respect for tourism is innate in the culture, and the penalties and punishment for messing with tourists or violence are beyond the pale of what the average Cuban citizen would want to go to as a result. So it is a place to go, and in this instance, I had gone down with my friend to go and see, there is an amazing jazz culture there, and they have a jazz festival in Havana each year. So we went down for Jazz Fest ostensibly and to eat food and have drinks and wander around a city that is so historically important to the Caribbean and to me as a person as well. The personal connection I have to Cuba is an odd one. My family were, on my father's side, were bankers in the Caribbean. And my father was actually born as a Canadian. He was born in Cuba and raised there. Though despite he went to boarding school in Canada, he was pretty much raised in Havana up until the revolution, where they left shortly before. And my dad is an economist and for years went back and taught capitalist economics at the University of Havana on invitation of the government. So this is a strange place to go back to for me. So even with that personal connection, the question often comes up as to why you should go to a certain place. I live in a world where I actually want to go to every place because I believe in this world and I believe in seeing the different cultures and how they work and how they interact, and believe in trying to diagnose the smiles on people's faces or the way they cobble themselves through the day. And Havana is a particularly interesting example of a people with such amazing amount of spine and wherewithal that they've been able to craft out of near nothing an existence that makes them happy. And I think philosophically, as an outsider coming into that, is really, really interesting. And it's easy to see that. It's not so easy to get there. So let's talk about that after the break. I'm Hugh Acheson. This is The Passenger, and we're trying to get to Cuba. So what you have to do to get to Cuba, years ago, up until the Obama administration changed travel restrictions and the ability for airline carriers to carry humans from the U.S. to Havana, before that happened, you'd have to fly from Europe or another Central American or South American country or Caribbean country or Canada. Canada is a huge, huge tourist market for Cuba, Cuba is a huge tourist market as well for Europeans. And you see this a lot when you're there still. But U.S. Americans can travel to Cuba a little more readily than before, up until very recently. So you really want to stay abreast on the current laws of what's happening. But generally, up until Trump jiggered it a little bit, changed it around a little bit and put a clamping down, up until that point, and these are the two times that I've been, all you had to do was state that you were doing research and you were fine. And I am doing research because I'm doing food research. My dad's an economist. He'd be doing economic research. So everything or journalists can go, et cetera, et cetera. And that just needs to be claimed on your return when you're returning to the States as to what your reasoning was for being there. On entry, you need a visa, and that visa is granted at the airport from your departure point. I flew most recently from Atlanta to Havana. It's under 2 hours and was very inexpensive. Upon landing at the airport, you go through customs in Cuba, which is absolutely hilarious because the uniforms of the Cuban customs people, first of all, it's generally they're all women. And they wear these like fishnet stockings and very short skirts. And it looks like a Bond movie, in like a 1970s Bond film, of the, like the beautiful communist women or something. It's very strange. So you get through, it's a very hustle and bustle airport. It's not a very big airport, but it's very hustle and bustle. People are going to be trying to approach you and take you anywhere you want in this car or that car and oh, go talk to that guy or I can get you this. And that comes at you full throttle. If you do not speak Spanish at all, you'll have a little bit of trouble keeping up, but it's amazing what you can do with just a little bit of Spanish. My Spanish is really based on kitchen Spanish. So I can say hot, duck, and behind you very quickly and effectively. And then I can say guacamole, which is, I don't even know if that's actually a Spanish word. But as soon as you get there, it's about a half an hour drive from the airport. Do not rent a car in Cuba. I don't think Americans can even really rent a car in Cuba. Transport is very easy from the airport. You can get a classic, which are the old jalopies that we've talked about, or you can get more modernized, somewhat modernized taxi that'll take you there and take you to wherever you are staying. And again, it's about a half an hour ride. Getting there is really easy. It's wonderful and it's fun and you have no excuse not to go. It's a 2 hour flight. You get a visa at the airport that you pay for. Really, that's it. Other than that, at the times that I've been in the past few years, I could just say that I was doing research, which I always am, in the food studies and food culture and understanding cuisines of different places. You can go on a trip for religious purposes and academics and things like that. And the Trump administration has just cinched down on that a little bit, and we're still trying to figure out what that means. But right now, we're still under the assumption that you can pretty well get to Cuba. It is a flight. During the Obama administration, they did allow flights to go directly from the States to Havana. And so I was on a Delta flight recently, the last time I went. Very easy, under 2 hours, and you're door-to-door. That 2 hours brings you, though Cuba geographically is just off the coast of Florida, it brings you to a place that is completely different from where you left from. It's completely different. You land at the airport, and it is hustle and bustle and people trying to get you to ride on their cars, and there are all these old jalopies, American cars that have been cobbled together, or their Ladas because of the Russian dominance. And you drive past the sort of agrarian infrastructure of Cuba, which is mostly sugarcane now, and a half an hour drive into the city of Havana. There are numbers of ways of being transported. Your feet are probably the best means of transport. Havana is not very hilly. So you can definitely get around on that if you're willing and able. The other way is a sort of shared taxi like a Lada. And Lada is the Russian car company, pretty much known as the longest living crappy car in Russia ever. How they're still getting parts for Lada, I have no idea. But how they get parts for anything in Cuba is really open to discussion, and I have no idea how they do this. The other, so there's those taxis, which are kind of shared taxis. So meaningly, it's a small car, and you might be jumping in with another family of three in the back seat, and you're kind of sharing the cost of it and then getting dropped off in some, you know, shared point. There are buses around town. I did not use the buses. Then you can use private taxis, which the hotel can call for you. They're more going to be like the Toyotas of the world. And then there are the old classics. And the classics are these, if you're prone to getting sort of car sick in a backseat because of gas emissions and exhaust, you probably shouldn't ride them because they're the creakiest old, you know, Fords from the 50s that have been cobbled back together over the years and run. They are so much fun to be in. There's much fluidity in pricing of these things. So you have to be prepared to bargain. Cubans bargain on everything. It's, you know, it's expected. If they say it's going to be 20 kuk and you say, well, how about 5? Suddenly you're in it for 10 and you're going somewhere. So it's just how it works. Then there are the little cocos. Cocos are crazy. Cocos look like yellow football helmets with a small motorcycle attached on the front, operated by some guy screeching through the roads. They're three-wheelers. They're terrifying but exhilarating. So if you like roller coasters and fun, they're great. And they are really inexpensive as well. So getting around is not very expensive. So what to do in Cuba otherwise? There are plenty of wonderful museums. There's a contemporary art gallery. All these things are government run. A lot of the bigger restaurants are government run. They're not very good. But back to the museums, there's a wonderful museum of sort of Cuban military history that's really interesting. It's definitely propaganda laden, but so is our side of that equation. So it's a good balance to go in there and see what the Bay of Pigs was all about, and the rise of Fidel and what Che Guevara meant to the whole equation of that. It's a palpably interesting story of revolution that is interesting to follow. And that's the Museo de la Revolución. The Casa de la Cultura de Plaza, that's where we went. It's the cultural sort of house, and that was the sort of home base of the Jazz Fest. Jazz Fest was a phenomenally interesting festival. It spans the different styles of music in the sphere of jazz, and if you're into jazz, it is really renowned as one of the best jazz festivals you can get to. And it's at a number of different venues, so we wandered around and had passes to all of them, and that was great. In advance, it was very difficult to book tickets for the Jazz Festival online. Cuba does not work that well online. The neighborhood of Old Havana, which is really what's really depicted in when we talk about the old cars and the jalopies, and Old Havana is really where all the places are that you really want to hang out at, and in what you see in one of the social club, you know, the album cover with the old car. Most of the museums are going to be in Old Havana. So most of the nightlife is really going to be in Centro. Some of the nightlife and good cafes will be in Old Havana. But I really found like the youth culture and the culture that I wanted to see was more in Centro. In the arts and museums, again, I talked about the Museo de la Revolución, which is amazing. That is the armory of the April 9th Museum. Dates in Cuba are really important, and they'll come up. And you just want to immerse yourself in the history of a place before you go to it a little bit, and it'll make a lot more sense. The Plaza de la Revolución is really interesting. And then just walking along the Malecón, which is the walled area on looking over to the ocean, and then the island, the old fortress on the other side of the canal is really beautiful and interesting. And the Malecón tends to be the place where Cubans really assemble during the evenings, mostly on the weekends. And it's kind of they party there, and it's their kind of open air space, and it's beautiful in that way. As you go towards Centro was the place, and I've touched on it all already, which is called Fabrica. Fabrica has a restaurant that's very lauded next door called El Guarida, and it's okay. I wouldn't say it was great. Sometimes it's really interesting as to why things get the amount of press they do and whether they really are good and worthy of it. So instead of going to La Guarida, I would go to Fabrica and eat at the food stalls within Fabrica. And again, Fabrica is this crazy like art gallery, show space. Fabrica has 4 music venues. It's got 10 bars. It's got tons of art galleries. And it's all in this one sort of... It's kind of like the Williamsburg of Havana. And it's kind of hipster cool in a lot of ways. So $2 is the admittance fee, and they give you a card. And the card is notated every time you get food or a drink, and then you pay when you leave. And so all the transactions are done in one place so they can keep up with it accounting-wise. And there's tons of security there. I wouldn't get out of hand there. They'll probably, I don't know what they do, but yeah. But really interesting, wonderful place. Another thing you really should do in Cuba is get a taxi or get a classic and go to the beaches. And the beaches are amazing in Cuba. When you look at the island of Cuba, it's pretty much all beaches. It's an island. There are beautiful beaches everywhere. And the beaches that people tend to go to easily outside of Havana are 20 minutes away, half an hour, 45 minutes away. And they're just a sequential grouping of beaches on the northern coast just east of Havana. We went to one called Playa de Santa Maria that was great. There are little cafes there near the beach. You can usually get, like, they'll sell you beer and stuff on the beach. All you need to do is grab a hotel towel or, Airbnb towel from the room, pack some water, and, that's all you need, and a little bit of money, and you'll be there. And the beaches are, unless it's a civic holiday, they're not very crowded. They're utterly beautiful beaches. The water's amazing, it's safe to get out there. Don't, if you're driving your own car, which again, I don't think that Americans can really rent cars in Cuba, don't speed. Cuban police and military have a lot of time on their hands to pull over speeders. They just seem to do it all the time by driving out there and watching people getting pulled over. But there's no excuse not to just ramble up the coast a little bit and experience these beaches that are just amazing. Let's talk about the basics of the economy and how it works. There are two different types of currency in Cuba, and the difference is the CUC and the COOP. So this is the financial system. The CUC is the convertible currency, somewhat indexed to the U.S. dollar, but the government taxes the exchange of it when you exchange U.S. dollars relatively highly. So one CUC, C-U-C, equals 87 cents American, approximately, at the time that I went. A COOP is the Cuban peso utilized by Cubans. It's not necessary to have it. One COOP approximately equals 25 COOP. Hotels are generally large. The one I stayed at was tiny. It was four rooms, but beautiful rooms. There are other boutique hotels that exist, and they're more popping up all the time. And it's interesting, like, how things are broken down after years of communism, and they're still communist. But it's just interesting, now Cubans can own property. They can have small businesses. They can own their own restaurants that are like paladars, which is kind of the privately owned restaurants. Paladar culture started by, like, literally hidden restaurants in somebody's basement or living room or whatever that would be conducting kind of black market restaurant. Now it's kind of accepted that those things exist. With tourism, I talked to one guy who was working in a cafe on a visit a couple of years ago, and I talked to him for a long time. He was a waiter there, and he told me that he was a doctor as well, but he was working as a waiter because he'd make a lot more money. And this is the problem that we have inherently when you visit a place that's having brain drain, is that you're exporting your talent because the economy can't support the people that they're training there. But and brain drain is real in Cuba, and it's why people, try and get across to Miami is to make some money to get by. And this is, again, I'm not a historian. I'm not an academic. I'm a chef. This is just my perspective. This is Hugh. On the line, I have an amazing Cuban musician who's not just a Cuban musician. He's from Havana. Well, he's not from Havana, but he's from Pinar del Rio. But he lives in Havana now, but he travels the world doing music under the name of Cima Funk. And it's Eric Iglesias Rodriguez. Eric, good to have you.
Yeah, how are you?
I'm great.
Pleasure for me.
Yeah, you're in France recording an EP. That's very cool. How do the French understand Afro-Cuban music?
Yeah, but it's a lot of Cuban everywhere. So everywhere that you go, you found them.
That's amazing. You were a medical student before, so you've always been a musician, but you're a medical student. What makes you decide to fully go into music full time?
One of the reasons is that my family, they work for the health system. So they are, you know, this prestigious of be good in that. So at the beginning, when I started to study, I just started for, you know, more for the family stuff. But I realized in some point that I will not be a good doctor. So at the same time, I get more involved in the music. I meet Ray Fernandez in La Habana. I see the first big, crazy live show that I ever see. And when I see that, I just decide to quit the medicine and just move to the capital and start to do my own thing. Because I was like crazy trying to get this sensation.
Well, you've been pretty successful in it. You're really the hottest musician in Cuba right now and around the world representing Afro-Cuban music. And the music's great. It's so contemporary, so full of life and just funky, interesting stuff. But you played so many shows in the last, and you're going to play so many shows in this year, but New Orleans Jazz Fest, Playboy Jazz Fest, Lollapalooza Argentina, Lollapalooza Chile. Does that make you happy, or is it like there's that amazing place in Cuba? There's Fabrica, which I went to many times in Havana, Fabrica de las Artes, the arts compound. And you played a huge show there the most popular show there ever. Was that during Jazz Fest or just a show on its own?
No, it's just a show. It was just a show that I made. But yeah, it's amazing. All this time and all this last year have been crazy, have been super fast and been super, super positive. All the answer of the crowd, everything is like getting more and more exciting, getting more and more cool, and the music is still born, so it's a happy time, super happy. Yeah. And playing Lollapalooza and in all these places, it's amazing. All this is amazing. It's like you don't see specifically in this when you start. So I start like 1 year and a half, almost 2 years. So I never saw that in so quick time I will be able to play in all these places, and I will be start to creating more and more people around. It's amazing.
It's just your talent, but that's so fast to be so successful. So back in Havana, what's a place that you love for food? Like, what's a place that you go to when you're at home and in Havana? Like, where should people go these days? Like, for really cool food.
For me, I'm a big crazy fan of a place calling Totò e Pepino. Okay. It's like an Italian place, but they are like a super cool people, super familiar. So you go there and you have like a real pasta making, and in normal prices, you know, not in super expensive prices, like the normal price for a restaurant in Havana. So it's amazing. And the food is crazy. Everything that they cook is like a really fresh and tasty. You know? And the place is amazing. And the people also, so every time that I go there, it's like having a good time. I go with my mom, I go with a friend, I have meeting there. So it's my favorite place for food.
Have you been to Salci Pizza?
No.
It's this amazing chef, really interesting guy who cooked. He's Cuban, but he cooked in Italy for a long time. He had a Michelin star. And it's just a regular, beautiful place. Simple, but really good baked goods and pizza and focaccia. But the day I went there, there was nobody there because there was no flour in Havana. and so those type of things in Havana, I mean, is it changing? Do you see an arc towards Havana being, is it changing at a more rapid pace than it ever has?
Bro, I'm not sure of how, or no one real answer. So I don't know specifically the reality of the changing and all this stuff. But what I feel in the music environment and in the artist environment is that it's a real big beginning from many artists, you know, like many people are like doing more art, are trying to get more in the network. They are trying to produce more. They are trying to understand better how it's work, how they can like go to more crowd, how they can like make more representative the Cuban culture in their own art. Last 3 years have been like crazy with the art. Everybody is like pushing and making more music, making more painters, photographer, everybody, the actors on all the films, everything is like getting crazy. The people is like doing a lot of things.
How important has a place like an arts complex like Fabrica been to arts culture in Havana?
Super important. It's like one oasis of all of us. Even the musicians, we go there, you know, we go there and you can have like a meeting place for meet people, talk about work or even talk about whatever in life. Or you can go for see a concert, a show. Always, most part of the time, you're going to see a show of new people that they are getting involved in the media environment. And you can go just for eat, you know, you can go just for see plastic arts. Even you can go to internships or some stuff, you know, YouTube, I've been there, Spotify too. Every time that something like cool and informative happen, Fabrica always open the doors for the people can come and work and enjoy and learn.
No, it's an amazing place. And it's such an incubator. It's just such a place that's so thriving and exciting. But there's so many different things going on at once. I was there for Jazz Fest last year, and you know, you wander through, and there are four different concerts going on, and there's so many different places to get food and a great drink, and it's just but the youth there and the young people there was just so. I mean, they just take their art so seriously and really hone in on it. And some of that's, I think, a reaction to what they have and the fact that there isn't a lot of, you know, abundance of, you know, things. And, you know, so they treasure their art in that way. And it just made me so proud to be in Havana.
Yeah, because in some point, now that we have more access to the information, the people start to know. I didn't know before, but I start to know now all the influence of the Cuban arts in the art of America, in the art even from Europe and all this stuff. We have been like the Cuban music, the Cuban art, the plastic art, the writers in Cuba have been like really strong in the culture everywhere. So now that we have more information, the people start to know that and they start to take more focus in the national art, you know, the art from Cuba. So it's like young kids, they start to try to say something in many different ways, but always trying to put in front the Cuban behavior, the Cuban sound.
Cuban people, in Havana, I just found that people were so proud, I mean, of their arts and of their culture, and it was so interesting to see. Like, if you're out on a Friday night, you want to go for a good drink, a good cocktail, where do you go?
Yeah. For a good cocktail, where you can go a couple places. But if you go to El Chanchullero, you can have like a good stuff there. You know what is El Chanchullero? It's in the Teniente Rey.
Oh, yes.
It's a cool place. It's a really good place. Up, you go up and you go have a good drink. But also you can go to, it's a new place now calling 309. That is pretty good also for have like good drinks.
Okay.
And Fabrica always have like good stuff for a drink because they have different restaurants and different bars, so you can choose whatever you want.
And what's your favorite beach to go to?
Le Mar Azul. Mar Azul is my favorite people there.
That's amazing. Well, that's very cool. Well, good luck with recording in Paris, and we look forward to the EP. And tell everybody one line on why they should go to Havana. Why should they go to Cuba?
Well, you should go to Cuba because there's people there and it's cool people there and you're going to enjoy it, definitely.
That's right. They're very cool people there. And it's only, for me, it's an hour and 45-minute flight from Atlanta, so it's really easy. So it's not as far away as Paris. It's super easy. Okay, Eric. Sima Funk, go listen to the music.
Thank you, bro. Take care, man.
I'm Hugh Atchison. You're listening to The Passenger from iHeartRadio. We'll be back after this quick break. I'm Hugh Atchison. This is The Passenger. One good way to prepare for a trip beyond packing your suitcase is through media. And for some recommendations, I'm going to hand it over to Jordan Runtog. He's a former music editor of People Magazine at VH1.com and regular contributor at Rolling Stone and Entertainment Weekly. Runtog is also co-host of the podcast Rivals, which is out now from iHeartRadio. If you're interested in music industry beef, definitely check that out.
We have Cuba to thank for so many genres of music. The mambo, bolero, rumba, just to name a few. They're all amazing on their own, and many are crucial ingredients to rock and roll. Prior to the trade embargo set in place by President Kennedy in 1961, Cuban sounds and rhythms were frequently heard on American radio and were a major influence on America's own music. For example, the classic Bo Diddley beat, bump, 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 bump. That's essentially a 3-2 clave rhythm, a common bell pattern found in Afro-Cuban music. Now, one of the most famous Cuban musicians in the United States, and anywhere for that matter, was Celia Cruz. She got her start early. According to legend, her very first pair of shoes were a gift from a tourist thanking her for the song she sang. She got her big break in the early 1950s when she was tapped to be the lead singer for the popular Cuban big band La Sonora Matancera, sort of like Cuba's answer to the Duke Ellington Orchestra. She became a fixture on Cuban television and radio and even headlined at Havana's legendary Tropicana nightclub. But Fidel Castro's uprising in 1959 essentially put an abrupt end to all that. The communist government took a dim view of the band, and Cruz eventually fled the country. She settled in the New York area, where she played an instrumental role in the development of a new genre, salsa. Literally a sauce, it blended elements of Afro-Cuban music with sounds of the Caribbean, Puerto Rico, Harlem jazz, plus elements of R&B, rock, and funk to taste. She earned herself the nickname the Queen of Salsa thanks to her complete dominance of the genre over the course of her extensive half-century career. She has some 37 studio albums, but a good place to start is probably Celia and Johnny, her 1974 collaborative album with Dominican flautist and percussionist Johnny Pacheco. But if you're going to Havana, you should probably throw it back old school to something from pre-revolutionary days at the Tropicana. From her 1958 album Cuba's Foremost Rhythm Singer, I recommend Que Bella es Cuba.
Cuba, que linda es Cuba. Cuba, que bella es. Quien no ha visto paisajes de Cuba no sabe el tesoro que pierde de ver.
The oppressive communist regime drove many artists, including Celia Cruz, out of Cuba in the early 1960s. But a great many stayed, and their lives were not made easy. Castro's government despised rock and roll. They even had a term for it, ideological diversionism. He effectively banned the genre and even gave a lengthy speech about the dangers of blue jeans and Elvis Presley. But despite Castro's ever-present fears of being invaded by the United States, the sounds of the British invasion could not be stopped. Many Cuban groups with names like Los Astros, Las Dadas, Los Bocaneros formed in spite of government harassment. These groups modeled themselves after the Beatles and the Rolling Stones and played their own version of amped-up Merseybeat, which they called street rock. The official ban was lifted in 1966, but the government closely monitored these groups in case they were counter-revolutionaries. Still, a band called Los Pacificos dared to hold a public rock concert in 1967. It had to be done with minimal prep to avoid suspicion. They borrowed instruments and performed with no practice. The two-hour set was recorded and smuggled out of the country, making it some of the rarest recorded music of the era. Tracks from it are available on YouTube, including a cover of The Kinks' All Day and All of the Night. Give it a spin, and remember those who risked it all to rock.
I intend to be with you in the daytime. Yes, I want to be with you all of the time.
Cuba has an amazing history of athleticism, and recently there was a big push to allow Cuban baseball players finally to be able to play in Major League Baseball in the States and in Canada, but that kind of got cinched again by the Trump administration, unfortunately. But before, really, the amazing baseball players would defect, and as you know, a lot of people were defecting from dance troupes and things like that, or visiting boxers, and but I really want to talk about boxing actually for a little bit, because Cuba's got a really storied Olympic amateur boxing situation going on. One of the most famous fighters in Cuba of all time was Teófilo Stevenson. He was an amazing, amazing Olympic boxer. He won 3 gold medals. And he passed away when he was 60, but at one point in his career, he was supposed to fight Muhammad Ali in the States, and it was being promoted, and this idea, and he was going to get paid just bankload of money. And eventually, he just came to the decision that he didn't want the money and that he had everything he wanted, which goes a long way to explaining Cuba to people and Cuban happiness, which is really innate and really interesting. And he said that, "I will not leave my country for $1 million or for much more than that. He'd rather be red than rich." He said, "What is $1 million against 8 million Cubans who love me?" And it just kind of, it blows your mind that somebody can make that choice in this day and age. And it's a beautiful choice to make. And Cuba's long been in the line for being the autocratic state that it is, and being communist, being heavy-handed, and imprisoning dissidents, and they do all those things. And it's a horrible regime in a lot of ways. But somehow, out of that, there is a core to the Cuban people that is still so warm and intelligent and savvy and understanding and empathetic and warm. I don't know. It's a culture that you can really look at, and that anything is possible with them. But Teófilo Stevenson is an amazing, amazing story. Going to a place like Havana, you have to be curious. You have to wonder about other cultures and want to see them and want to see them interact with each other and want to see the strategies on how they plot their day and cobble together through life with very little. I think you want to have a historical mindset that makes you inquisitive as to what's going on and why they are where they are now. We go to places like Havana, why we go anywhere? Because we're curious as humans. And I don't think there's any, you know, I think it's really important to understand and know the names of your neighbors on your street where you live. An equivalent, a bigger equivalency to that is that it's important to understand your neighbors who are next to you, who are 60 miles off the coast of Florida, because they're there. And it's a culture that we know very little about because we've sanctioned them to a point where they're a completely different culture than us. And it's restrictive to get there. And we've closed the door. And I think we need to open the door to places like Cuba and understand them.
You've been listening to The Passenger. This is a production of iHeartRadio, created by Hugh Acheson and Christopher Hasiotis. We're produced and edited by Mike Johns. Our researcher is Jesslyn Shields, and Christopher Hasiotis is our executive producer. Special thanks to Gabrielle Collins, Crystal Waters, and the rest of the crew. If you like The Passenger, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps other people like you find the show. If you're a local and you want to let me know what I missed and where I should go on my next visit, or if you've recently been a passenger like me and want to share your experience, hit me up on Instagram and Twitter at Hugh Acheson. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, use the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Thanks for listening.